But it, when the head cold went away, the hearing didn't come back.
Wow. So people need to check that too, because your ears, nose, and throat are all connected, right?
Yep. And so it came back quite a while later that I had such a severe ear infection when I had the head cold that damaged it.
Well, you're not damaged now. You are here with us on the Edge and April Mahoney. Brains, all the way from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, is our guest today, Brenda Hammond. Hello, Brenda. How are you, beautiful?
Hello. Thank you for inviting me. And I am doing absolutely fantastic.
Well, you are fantastic. And you are a fantastic author, an insurance broker. You are a wife. You have fur babies. And you have an incredible story to share with us. So let's start. Tell my brains a little bit about you and your revelations.
Well, I grew up in rural Alberta, where they did homesteading back in that day. So we didn't have a lot of family around us. And so, yeah, it was a rural upbringing, lots of critters that we had to look after, horses and cattle and things like that. And life changed when I was a kid in a dramatic way, and I kind of tumbled through life for the next 40 years trying to figure out why it happened and if I had caused it and how I was going to get over it. And I couldn't get over it for the longest time. I didn't know how to get over it.
What was it? What did you experience?
When I was 5, I was sexually abused by a farmhand. And the farmhand was somebody that my parents had known. They knew his family, and they'd known him since he was a child. And he was, like, you know, in his 18 or whatever years he was. And then later a family member joined in. So I would get on my horse first thing in the morning, sun up, and I would take off, and I wouldn't come home until sundown. And in northern Alberta in the summertime, the sun doesn't go down till 11 o'clock at night. So I'm 5 and I'm on my horse, and that's the only way that I could actually escape, because the home life wasn't safe anymore, because now I had 2 perpetrators that were there. So I literally lived on the outside of my family for all my life.
Have you had an opportunity to share that with your mother? Were you fearful of that, or were they not, you know, it was a time where you didn't talk about it, so they weren't open to that conversation?
Oh, no, you never talked about that sort of stuff. I was about 9 when I told my mother that something had happened, and her response was, well, that's what you get when you play with boys. And I was, like, just dumbfounded, and I remember going outside and dry heaving, because I was just so distraught over it. And growing up on a farm, you see animals and you see what happens. You see the mating process of the animals. You know what happens. And you know that in the springtime, a baby comes, you know, from this thing. And I thought for the longest time that I was going to have a baby. Oh, like a longest time. So when... this is going to get kind of gross for some people, but when I finally got
it's
my...
It's not gross. It's real. It's real. Yeah. Somebody needs to hear it.
Yeah. When I finally got my period, which I was a late bloomer at age 14, I thought that I was having a baby. Like, I literally thought that I was having a baby. And the only thing that actually helped was when I went to health class. And they talked about the anatomy of the boys and the girls. And... you know, what happens and things like that. And that's when I finally realized that I wasn't pregnant. And I thought I had been pregnant for the last 9 years. Wow. So, I mean, it's comical when I think back at it now, but it was so sad that I actually had to learn about that in health class. So I hope that the public education and the private educations of around the world always keep health class a forefront, because if you've been victimized and traumatized and sexually abused and you can't talk to your family, you try to glean information from wherever you can. And mine was health class.
And, you know, I have a couple friends of mine that their mothers never talked to them about that. Luckily for me, my mother was, you know, my mother got pregnant at 14 years old, her first time doing it too. And she didn't have any idea. And she was pregnant.
Yeah.
And when she had the baby, she didn't even know what was going on. So. No. Mothers, talk to your daughters. You yep. are their first line of defense against any sexual assault. If yep. you talk to them and let them know that, yes, they have a vagina, and yes, it is theirs, and yes, it is sacred, and no one's supposed to touch it, and you're supposed to keep it clean, and at one point it's going to leak, okay? They're going to go on. They're going to go on to the next subject, okay? It's not a big deal. It is a part of the anatomy. You have two eyes. You got one nose, one mouth, and whatever sexual unit you are born with. Okay, so really, okay. get over it, okay? This is the 21st century. So now okay. you've gotten over it, and the way that you got over it is by writing. Tell us about your books. You are a very accomplished author, and you have come up with some great anthologies and compilations. Tell my brains about that.
Thank you. Well, I decided that after, well, over 40 years, that I had to turn all of this negativity into something positive. Like, I didn't think that I was brought into this world to be an abuser's pinata. I really didn't. I thought there has to be something bigger than this. So I started journaling, and I thought, okay, how can I change my perspective about what had happened? So I wrote my first book, and I wrote it on the premise of not to out anybody and not to bring shame on the family or any of that sort of stuff. I wrote it so that I could reach another woman like me. So that she would know that she wasn't alone, that whatever's happened to her, there is somebody else out there that this has happened to. And that actually started the writing. So I wrote three of my own books. And then I really wanted to give back more. So then Sacred Hearts was started, where it's the anthology where other people are coming forward and sharing their stories. And we have both men and women now sharing their stories of overcoming.
Oh, that's beautiful. And, you know, men are very vulnerable. They don't want to talk about it. They just figure that it's just something that happened, unfortunately, but there's a lot of shame associated. But it continues the cycle, because hurt people hurt people.
Yes.
And that's not what we want. We want to stop the cycle of abuse and hurt, be it with men, excuse me, be it men or women. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the death of your granddaughter. I know that that is very tender to you, but share that with us as well.
Well, Jordan was born with it's a recessive gene. I can't even remember the name anymore because they've changed the name. So she was born with cysts on her kidneys so that she couldn't pee. And any child that's born with autoimmune recessive kidney disease usually are stillborn. They don't make it. And Jaden was born, and her kidneys were the size of a football. And we tried, the doctors tried and tried to get her to void a little bit, but at 7 days she passed away. And I often say that, you know, I didn't get to spend my whole life with Jaden, but Jaden got to spend her whole life with me and with those that are around her. And what more could a little soul ask for than unconditional love? And with the passing of Jaden, Sacred Hearts was born, because I wanted to share her story. I didn't want her to be forgotten, you know. And I think, while I was researching ancestry, and ancestry, you go back to generations and you're finding the paper trail of your ancestors and you're knowing what they're doing. And that's when it hit me. Somebody's going to go back into my family tree, you know, 50 years or 100 years from now, and they're not going to see her. They're not going to know that she even existed. And I didn't want that. I wanted her to have a legacy. So, and I wanted to share her story for other grandmothers that had lost grandchildren. And so I put it out. I says, anybody else want to share a story about the loss of a grandchild and that sort of stuff? And I didn't get anybody who wanted to share that story, but I did get people who wanted to share about sexual abuse and disfamily relationships and death and grief and suicide. So Sacred Hearts was born because of my granddaughter.
And is that how you created that beautiful cover? Because I know that there's a synergy between the last two books. Tell us how you created that.
Well, actually, it was an artist in South Africa who got a hold of me and said that she wanted to do the cover of Sacred Hearts. And I was quite surprised. And I was looking at her pictures. And I said, okay, well, send me something. So she sent me this cover.
Oh, beautiful.
This artist.
Yeah, show the whole book. Lift it
and,
up.
And
lift it up just a little bit.
Lift it up just a little bit.
There you go. All right.
So, and I had seen one of her photos that had the pearls in the headband. And I said, okay, it has to have a heart and it has to have the pearls and the wings. So that's the cover got started by Rieti Delport out of Mossel Bay, South Africa. She is the one who does the covers.
She does a beautiful job. She does a beautiful, it really speaks to you. It jumps off the page, it's tender. So tell us a little bit about some of the stories that are inside the pages of the book. How did you find these wonderful people? How did they join you in this collaboration?
Well, actually, most of them found me. I knew of some of their stories. Some of the women that I knew personally had stories. So I coerced them into being in the book.
I got you.
And other people found me over the internet. And one of the ladies that found me was, her name is Elizabeth out of Ontario. And she had been following me after I had written my last personal book. And she says, I need to get a hold of this lady. So she got a hold of me. And she was terrified to tell me her story. And I says, sweetheart, there isn't anything that you can tell me that I haven't heard already. So she shared with me and I just told her, I says, I believe you. I see you and I believe you. And she now has written in 3 books. The transformation from Liz, from the first time I seen her to now, is astounding. Wow. She is out there. She's creating life. She's doing things. So each of the stories, like Liz's was about sexual abuse by her uncle. She had lost a baby. You know, she has mental illness. She lost her children. Like, it was just this ongoing negative cycle for her. And now she's stopped that negative cycle and has gained back her power just by simply writing and sharing and owning her story and standing on it instead of in it.
Exactly, because you have to stand in your truth, right?
You have to stand.
And it hurts. It does hurt, but you're not alone. And again, you can, with your story and your testimony, you can really kind of help somebody else make it through that. So what is your writing process? You know, you've written now, what, almost 5 books.
Yeah.
How do you do that? You know, I know me, I just continue to write. I wake up in the middle of the night and I'll write something. I'll be at the park, I'll write something, and then I will put it together because it seems like it comes together after the fact. What is your writing process?
Mine is, I do a lot of the thinking, except I don't do a lot of the writing down. I just, for probably a couple months, I'm formulating and I'm thinking and the brain is percolating. And if something resonates at me at 2 in the morning, a line or sentence or whatever it is, I'll get up and I'll write it down. And then I'll go back to sleep and then I'll just, because it's something that I wanted to remember to say. And then I'll just sit down and I will just start writing and I won't stop. Mm-hmm. Until I have whatever I need to have done in the draft. And then I go back and then I'll fill it in and change it and fix it and do whatever. So when I start writing, I'm a binge writer.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, I love what you said, how your brain is percolating. And that's what we do here on The Edge. We percolate your brain. But also in your stories, it's not just about telling what has the trauma that's happened, but you also ask your writers to come up with something positive and a resolution at the end. And I think that that is very powerful too, because it's very cathartic for them to say, wow, I've been through this, but look where I am on the other side. And that's a great read for your readers. I think that's powerful. How'd you come up with that?
Well, I decided that you can't fix negative with negative. And if I can figure out the positive in my story, then I'm not telling my story and dumping it on somebody and then walking off and going, oh, that's cool. Okay, got that off my chest.
Right.
I wanted them to be inspirational stories. Yes, there's traumatic, but I wanted them to leave the reader whoever it is that is still stuck in their story, the tools and the ability to look at their situation differently and say, okay, like, you know, I can become, I'm strong and I'm resilient and I'm determined and I am, you know, a warrior woman because I got through all of this crap, you know, instead of I'm a victim and I'm not a survivor and I've been traumatized, and they get lower and lower and lower with all of the negative words. So when you start changing people's idea of their story and making it more positive, then more positive comes out of it.
Absolutely. So show us the covers of your books, please. We want to see them.
Okay. This is the second one. Can you see that one, April?
Beautiful. Yes, I can.
Okay. And book number three. We don't have it in cover yet, but it is two women and a man that are standing there. So that's that one. This is the first. This is my first book that I wrote.
Oh. And is that this book?
No. No, it's not. But it was as a five-year-old.
Right. That's when you would ride on your horse and get away. Oh, yeah. Wow.
So this book turned out to be more, if you're a teacher or a psychiatrist or anybody like that deals with trauma, this is an excellent book to read because it describes what the child is going through. This is written by the five-year-old child, not written in the five-year-old words, but written by the five-year-old child as to what trauma they have and why they don't tell. Because that's the big thing, is why. My kid will always tell me, no, they won't. And there's reasons why they won't. So that kind of goes into that. I don't have the third book to cover, but I hear I Am is written from the woman's point of view. So this is my journey. And it talks about, you know, my journey through sexual abuse. It talks about my very first dysfunctional marriage. You know, he was a sex addict, cheater, liar. And then he hired somebody to kill me. So that's all. That's all in that book.
That's a whole nother video cast. Girl, you hired somebody to kill you. Wait, pump your brakes. Pump your brakes. We want to hear a little bit about that. He hired somebody to kill you.
Yes, he did. Well, we divorced and he was very possessive and obsessive. He was a sex addict. So he was, I always call it to the dark side of a sexual relationship. He was heading off to the nearest city to see prostitutes and dominatrix and all of that sort of stuff. And I didn't know. So I knew that he was cheating and I couldn't find proof. And he kept saying, well, you know, you can't prove it. You can't prove it. So it took me quite a few years. My girls were 18 when I finally was able to escape for the last time fully. Because I had tried to leave a few times before and he, you know, would stop the Greyhound bus and pull me off by my hair and that sort of stuff. So
at the front door, girl, he stopped the bus.
We'd be on the highway and he would pull his car in front of the bus and make the bus stop. And then he'd get on and pull me off by my hair. So when I finally did manage to leave him, it was in a covert, I'll call it a covert operation, because I was competing on three horses at the time and they were 7 hours away. So I said, well, maybe, you know, I should move there and do whatever. And, you know, and I planted the seeds. So finally, when he agreed, yeah, that'd be a good idea. Maybe you should do that. He left at the same time and I moved away. And that's how I left him the very last time. And then a year later, he said, oh, well, I'm going to move in with you. And I said, no, I want a divorce.
Wow.
And then he went crazy and started stalking me, and he tried to find the horses to shoot them, and I lived in my car for 2 years because I couldn't give anybody my address. He was literally would phone me and say, I have the rifle sighted on you, and the minute you open up the door, I'll blow your head off. And, you know, and that went on, and finally when he died, the police found that he had hired somebody to kill me. And I had people come in where I was working and yell my name, and I'd turn around and they'd snap my phone and run off. And I'm going like, oh my God. And then when I found out what was really going on, I was just like, oh, oh my. So, okay, yeah.
So as a woman that has experienced all of that, what kind of conversations do you have or you had with your daughters?
Well, my daughters, right from the get-go, I was very overprotective of them as a mother who's been sexually abused would be. But, you know, they knew all about sex. They knew the birds and the bees. We had that conversation. I bought them condoms at 16 because I said, if you were going to go out, and not because I was giving them permission, I said, if you go out on a date and you are in a situation and things are happening, at least you will have protection. It's not a license to use it, but at least you will have protection so that, you know, if you can't control that situation. I mean, they laugh at me now because they said, like, you know, the condom's expired.
But you know what? You know why they expired? Because you had that conversation with them and it wasn't so exciting.
And it wasn't so exciting.
It wasn't something that, oh, okay, let me go ahead and do it because it's taboo. I'm going to do exactly what mama says. Don't do it. And you know what? You're giving them permission to be safe. You're giving them permission to be a human being. Sex is the most beautiful thing in the world. Quick little story. My daughter was here and we were talking. I was braiding her hair. And she says, oh, mommy. She says, dick is so ugly. And I was like, was that one of your little friends? And she goes, no, a boy's pee-pee. And I said, well, when did you see that? She says, well, we were at a friend's house and it fell out of his pajamas. She says, it's such an ugly thing. And I said, well, yeah, you, as you get older, you may find a newfound appreciation for it. But that was the end of the conversation. I mean, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, you know, this is just devastating. Who's touched you or whatever. But it did open the door for me to have a conversation with her about, you look different down there. Things function different. You're going to change. Don't let anybody violate you. If there's anything wrong, you can come to mama. And then you're on to the next conversation. Friends, please, please, please have this conversation with your children. Because what's going on here in the United States is there is a lot of sex trafficking.
Oh, it's everywhere.
And, you know, it is like San Diego. I can't believe how many are being human trafficked. And they're not just doing it for sex. They're doing it for body parts. Okay, and they're also doing it for slavery. So talk to your kids, teach them to be safe, teach them how to get a predator off of them. And you know what? Believe them. If they tell you, side on their side more so than somebody else's, you know?
So, create the password.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And so you are in the insurance business, another way of protecting people. We want to talk a little bit about that in your career. You are an insurance broker there in Canada. Can you tell our brains a little bit about, okay, well, there's a term life insurance, and then there is a whole life insurance.
Yeah.
I want you to explain the difference between those and how important it is to protect yourself to offset any unforeseen deaths or disabilities.
Yeah, so the difference between the two insurances is basically, for some people, is like renting an apartment or buying a house. So term insurance is designed to be a product that is for short term time, like a mortgage, when your kids are growing up, that sort of stuff. You can now get term to age 100, but and they become a more permanent product. But technically, term insurance ends at age 80, and it can be increased every 5, 10, 15, 20, or however many years. But it is designed to run out before you do. That's why the prices are so cheap. Then you can get into a product. It's like buying a house, investing in it, and it's permanent insurance. And there's all kinds of names. There's universal life, whole life, all of that sort of stuff. But the nuts and bolts is it's a product that is designed to last as long as you live. And you pay more money for that because they're saying now, if you are 30, I'm going to cover you for the next 70 years. So you have to pay a little bit more for that. And that way, no matter how you die or when you die, that coverage is going to be there. Everybody's going to die. Nobody is not going to die. And it all costs, it all costs money to die. It costs money to be born and it costs money to die. So I'm a firm believer that everybody, if they can get it, should have at least some life insurance to take care of their final expenses, if not more. families raising children should have large amounts of insurance, because if the caregiver is gone, the spouse that's bringing in the money is gone, how is that family going to survive? You know, they can't eat their house. They have to continue somehow. So I can't replace people, but I can replace their money. Mm-hmm. You know, so the younger you are, while you're having families, the more insurance you need, and the older you get and those obligations are gone and your house is paid for, hopefully, not in this day and age, but then you need less insurance. But everybody needs some life insurance, because...
Well, not even just so much life insurance. You know, what I'm looking into is I'm looking into long-term disability insurance. I want to be in one of those places for mom with the nice little movie theater and the nail salon, and they take you around on the car. You know, long-term, because people with medication now are not necessarily dying. They're getting disabled. They're having strokes. They're having heart attacks, autoimmune disease. Their medication is running rampant. They can't afford to do that. And so they need to be able to have something to offset themselves long term. Is that also something that you provide people, is with long term insurance disability?
Yeah, we do long term disability. And disability is usually tied to your job and things like that. But you can get long term care insurance now, where it helps with you in a nursing home and things like that. The problem is it all costs a lot of money.
Yes,
so if you can buy, the best way to do it is if you can buy yourself a whole life product or a permanent product that has cash values built in, then that cash builds up, and then you can use that. You can pull that money out of your policy and use that for living longer. Because with our modern technology now and all of the medications, it's an old quote they used to say, it's taken a long time for us to die.
Right, right. And now you say, now I want to ask this question too really quickly. You have a whole life, and you say, use round figures, $10,000. And you borrow against that, $3,000. So that means that your death benefit will only be $7,000. Correct?
No.
People think, educate me. Good. That's good. Tell me.
No, old policies used to be that way. And I'm not sure what it's all in the States, but in Canada, you can have a policy that earns cash values, or you can have a policy one that has surrender values. So if I have a $10,000 policy and I have cash value built up into it of say $4,000, I can pull out $3,000 of that. It doesn't erode my original $10,000 because I'm still making payments into it, and I can use that $3,000 to go do whatever I want. If I decided that I had a $10,000 policy and I had $7,000 of cash value and surrender value, if I didn't want to make the payments anymore, then I could say, okay, stop all payments, and then the insurance company will use the surrender value. And they'll say, okay, you have a $7,000 policy that you've paid for, and now you're good. So some policies back in the day, if you borrowed from it, then you had to pay that money back.
Right.
Well, if you had to borrow from your insurance policy, you don't have money to pay it back. You don't go borrow from your insurance just because you're willy-nilly. It's because you need the money. So now they have policies with cash value. So you just have to be aware when you're buying that permanent policy, what kind you're buying. And it takes a while for cash values to build up. But, you know, you can get that money out as long as you keep making the premium payments. That's your money.
What do you look for when you're looking for an insurance agent to represent you and your best interests? What sort of characteristics are you looking for?
You want somebody who's going to talk to you, not talk at you, and not talk down to you, and not use big words, and not come with, you know, spreadsheets of 50. Because frankly, that just confuses everybody, because they're not trained to be insurance. And yes, they have some idea, but just talk normal to people. Just give them the facts of what it is. Don't embellish it. Don't do anything. My job, and I always say that to all my clients, my job is to give you information. Your job is to do what you want with it. So I have to be very clear on, if you want a 10-year policy, this is what it's going to be. And in 10 years, your premium is going to go to here. And yes, we can change that. But if you're not healthy, you're stuck paying this big premium, or you can do this, or you can do that. So you need somebody who's going to talk to you, not at you.
Someone that's going to provide options, somebody with integrity. You're going to go and look at the company. You're going to go and look in. You can Yelp them brains to see really what people are thinking and what they're saying. Now, remember, Brenda Hammond is in Canada, but yeah, the information that she is providing us is universal. So yes, if you are in Canada, I want you to definitely look at Brenda Hammond for her books and for her insurance and for her love and her wisdom. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you, beautiful.
You can contact me by my email, which is Spirit Creek. So it's SPIRITCREEK at ExploreNet. And ExploreNet is spelled XPLORNET.com. And that is my universal email that everything comes to. So you can also visit me on my websites, which is, you know, www.brendahammond.com or www.sacredheartsrising.com.
She is a rising heart. She is a sacred heart. She's a beautiful heart. And thank you for opening your heart here on The Edge. I really appreciate it. It was a lot to cover. It was a lot to experience, but I'm sure it was also a lot to live through. Brains, again, we can't do anymore but provide you the information. It's up to you to follow through, speak your truth. You don't have to be silenced. Talk to your children, cover yourself with some good insurance, and keep staying close to the edge. I got everything for you that you could ever want right here. And if there's anything that you need, let me know and I'll seek it out all over the world. Go in, watch other great interviews, subscribe to all of our channels. We've got a great YouTube channel. Brenda's going to be uploaded there on YouTube. We've got Spotify and LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook. We're just all over the planet because we love you and we care about you. Again, thank you so much. And also, Brains, know that you are entered to win a copy of one of Brenda Hammond's books by hitting like, love, or wow, and I'm watching, okay? And I will also send you a wonderful limited edition coffee mug from On the Edge. So again, thank you, thank you, thank you for everything that you do. Please come back, let us know what's going on with your books. Maybe you could even take one of these books and turn it into a screenplay.
You never know.
You never know. Brains are watching in Hollywood. All right. Thank you so much for being here with me, baby. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much for having me, and much love to you.
All right. Bye, Brains. Have a great day.
Bye.